This is Audible.
Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker Rebellion. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, and Colleen Delaney. Episode 5, The Circles of Hell. And the war on Technos 3 went on. It was spring, and the temperature soared. The snow and ice melted, flooding the trenches. Life erupted everywhere, strange and deadly forms appearing out of nowhere to clog the trenches and tunnels. It was spring, and hibernation was over. They burst through the floors and the walls, aggressive and carnivorous. Hungry plants with reaching thorns, thickly furred creatures that seemed mostly fangs and claws, small and large and everything in between, all of them determined to seize their chance at life. They fought each other for food and territory, and the winners fought the rebels for control of the blood-splashed trenches and tunnels. The rebels fought back-to-back with swords and axes and the occasional energy gun, forcing back the ravenous hordes as they had done so many times before. The Wolf security forces fought the same battle on the only day in the short year when the two sides didn't make war on each other. Jack Random and Ruby Journey fought side by side, their flashing blades dripping alien blood and gore. They were strong and fast, and they never grew tired. They seemed to be everywhere at once in the great maze of tunnels, helping where most needed, and nothing large or small could stand against them. And Alexander Storm, who had once fought at Random's side when he was young and in his prime and unbeatable with a sword, now worked to plot strategy and send fighters where they could do the most good. He worked all day with a small army of scouts and runners and tried not to think of himself as old. The second day of spring dawned. The fauna and flora had been taught their place again, and the rebels and wolf mercenaries were able to turn their attention back to the more serious business of war. The rain slammed down in a never-ending torrent. The trenches filled ankle-deep with icy water, the levels always rising just a little faster than it could drain away. The rejects splashed through the water to their positions, waiting for the signal. Then the whistles blew, and both sides boiled up out of their trenches to meet in the no-man's land between. Men and women screamed and died, and blood pooled briefly on the jagged metal floor before the driving rain washed it away. And that was the second day of spring. Summer dawned. The rain stopped as though someone had turned off a tap, and the heat rose and rose until it became unbearable, and then went on rising. Water in the trenches turned to steam. The blistering air seared lungs, and every move in the awful heat became an effort. The sun was blinding in a brilliant sky. The Wolf security forces climbed into specially designed cooling suits. The rebels didn't need them. Neither, to practically everyone's surprise, did Random and Ruby. They just adapted. And when the whistles blew, both sides came howling out of their trenches to fight again. At the end of the day, the whistles blew, and both sides fell back. They took the wounded with them. Wounds festered quickly in the inhuman heat. The dead were left despoiled, to be recovered later, when the heat dropped a little during the night. The second day of summer came, and the temperature rose still further, a killing heat for all but the strongest. And still, both sides came roaring up out of their trenches when the whistles blew. There was killing to be done. Then it was autumn, and the temperature dropped like a stone. The whistles blew, and men and women went up and over the top to fight again. The jagged metal killing field was already dark crimson from the splashed blood and offal of the previous day's battle, baked onto the metal by the merciless summer sun. Gale force winds arose, blowing suddenly out of nowhere, strong enough to pick up a man and carry him away. Both sides wore weights on their belts and in their boots to hold them down. The winds picked up scattered metal fragments from miles around and swept them on at blinding speed. Razor storms that could strip unprotected flesh down to the bone in seconds. Both sides wore armor, which slowed them down even more. Battles became slow, farcical affairs, but blood still spilled, and neither the wounded nor the dead saw the joke. And finally, winter came again. Snow and ice and blizzards and the killing cold. The security forces wore special thermal suits. The rebels didn't need them. Neither did Random and Ruby. They'd adapted. Blood spattered the snow, red on white, and fighters crashed to the ground and did not move again. Jack Random and Ruby Journey fought on, going out again and again, whatever the weather or which shift it was. The rejects roared their names as battle cries and followed them into battle, whatever the odds. The cold seared their lungs and chilled the blood in their veins, but their rage was hotter than any cold the winter could throw at them. 2 days passed, and winter gave way to spring, and it all began again. And that was how the years passed on Technos 3. Through it all, the weather and the hate and the killing, only one side pressed forward. Step by step, yard by yard, the rejects drove the Wolf security forces back, pushing No Man's Land closer and closer to the factory complex as trench after trench fell and was occupied by the rebels. Out in No Man's Land, Jack Random felt fitter and stronger than ever, and his sword arm never seemed to tire. He felt like himself again, the legendary hero at whose name the Iron Throne itself had trembled. And if he looked a little younger than he had, only Ruby Journey noticed, and she kept it to herself. The rejects roared their names and pressed forward, scenting victory. And good men and women died, as well as bad. And the Sisters of Mercy did what they could for the wounded. And the war went on. Daniel and Stephanie Wolfe waited impatiently in what passed for the main reception hall of the factory complex. It was actually just a large storage area that wasn't being used for anything else, but some brave soul had tried to brighten it up with a red carpet and a few flowers here and there. The carpet was just a little tatty, but the flowers bloomed brightly despite the complex's artificially controlled environment. Daniel scowled fiercely, tapping one foot impatiently and hugging himself to keep from flying apart. Things had not been going at all well for the Wolves lately, and this particular meeting had the potential for a really major screw-up. Stephanie stood at his side, cool and calm and very controlled, if only because one of them had to be. And Cardinal Kasser's presence had not been requested. This was a Wolf affair, and the new arrival was their guest. Kasser could meet him later. Much later. The only two people she hadn't been able to keep out were Toby Schreck and his cameraman Flynn. The Empress had personally let it be known that she wanted the new arrival's reception carried live on Holovision, and though she hadn't deigned to explain why, what Lionstone wanted, Lionstone got, if you were fond of breathing. So Toby and Flynn set up their lights and faded as far into the background as they could, trying hard not to be noticed. This was one show they were determined not to be thrown out of. It wasn't every day you got a chance to film the legendary half-a-man himself in what remained of his flesh. There weren't many in the Empire who didn't know the cruel and terrible history of half-a-man. Just over 200 years ago, he'd had a far too close encounter with a species of alien still not identified or re-encountered. He'd been abducted right out of the command chair of his own star cruiser, the Beowulf, disappearing in full view of his bridge crew. There'd been no warning, no trace of alien ship or presence. He was just there 1 minute, and gone the next. The aliens held on to him for 3 years, performing experiments on him that he remembered only partially, in his worst nightmares. Mostly, he remembered screaming. Then they sent him back, dropping him out of nowhere onto the bridge of the Beowulf, even though the ship was halfway across the Empire from where it had been. And that was when the nightmare really began. The aliens sent only half of him back. The left half. He'd been split right down the middle, from scalp to crotch, his right half replaced by an energy construct of roughly human shape. The then emperor had him examined by the finest scientists and medics of that time, but none of them came up with any explanation worth a damn. They couldn't even agree on why he was still alive, never mind what had happened to him. His right half was now composed of an energy field that had all the properties of matter, but was still clearly energy, though of a form the empire had never encountered before. The whole empire was placed on red alert for over a year, in case the aliens showed up again. But they didn't. And eventually everyone stood down from red alert and calmed down a little. Half a man, as he'd been named almost immediately by the tabloid news channels, became a main advisor to the emperor on alien matters and continued to hold that position as years passed. Emperors died, and his human half grew no older by even a day. Now as then, he was largely responsible for setting alien policy within the empire, and if anyone felt like arguing with him, all it took was one close look at what aliens had done to him to change their minds. Half a man was also responsible for the creation of the investigators. He felt the empire needed a body of men and women specially qualified to deal with any and all alien threats. He trained them all personally, then and now, in the best ways to understand, control, and kill aliens. The investigators worshipped him. Which had been known to make the various occupants of the Iron Throne just a little uneasy down the years. Luckily for all concerned, investigators were by nature a solitary breed who did not care for each other's company. The only thing they had in common was half a man. They'd die for half a man. Or kill for him. Which was why he'd come to Technos 3. Toby Schreck was fascinated by the man, and so was Flynn, though both of them tried hard not to show it. Half a man had displayed no fondness for publicity after his return, particularly after the way the tabloids hounded him, and he'd shunned the media spotlight for decades, rarely appearing in public, except when ordered to by the emperor of the day. As a result, coverage of the man tended to be few and far between, and any reporter with new footage could practically name his own price. The reception itself would be going out live, but Toby had no doubt he could sneak some extra footage afterward. Maybe even get an interview. Everyone's head turned as they heard a particular sound approaching down the corridor outside the reception hall. The sound of 1 foot tapping on the metal floor. They all drew themselves up to look their best and unconsciously braced themselves. The door swung open, and half a man came in. Toby's first thought was, "That's not so bad, I can handle that." He hadn't been sure how he'd react to such an awful sight in the flesh, so to speak, but the human half looked human enough, and the glowing, spitting energy half was just energy. The human half was a little over 6 feet tall, in good shape, and conservatively dressed. The half a face was subtly disturbing, but the hair was a common enough dark brown, as was the single eye, and the half a mouth was set and firm. Toby couldn't read any emotion in the mouth or the eye. There wasn't enough information in half a face. He couldn't even decide if it had once been handsome or not. The energy half was entirely human in space, though it spat and crackled constantly. But Toby had a sick feeling it wasn't even close to the same shape as the human half. It had no particular color, or perhaps it was all colors. And it wasn't just its brightness that made it hard to look at. Toby tore his gaze away from half a man and checked quickly that all his lights were working and in the right place. He and Flynn had had to guess at the exposures. He glanced at Flynn and was relieved to see the camera on his shoulder was already silently capturing everything. Billions of people were watching this meeting live in this sector alone, and if he didn't screw this up completely, Toby Schreck could finally be on his way to being accepted as a real reporter. The two wolves stepped forward to officially greet half a man, then stopped as three newcomers stepped silently through the open door, wearing the formal blue and silver cloaks of the investigators. Stephanie and Daniel gaped openly. Toby's blood ran cold. Three investigators together in the same room? This was unheard of. No one had said anything about this. Toby glared at Flynn to make sure he kept filming. There was an even bigger story here than he'd thought.
"Daniel and Stephanie Wolf," said half a man. Allow me to present my three companions. They are the investigators Edge, Barr, and Shoal.
Each investigator bowed briefly as they were named. Edge was a tall, slender man well into his 50s. His long face came to a sharp point at his chin, and his eyes were too wide and too bright. His slight scowl was openly contemptuous. Barr stood like a soldier, every muscle to attention, short and square like a bulldog. He was clearly into his 60s with close-cropped, gunmetal hair. He looked like he was just waiting for an order to kill somebody. Shoal was the youngest, a medium-height, compact woman in her late 40s, with dark, spiky hair and a cool gaze. Toby thought he saw a smile lurking in one corner of her generous mouth, but since she was an investigator, he was probably wrong. It was common knowledge investigators smiled only when they were killing, preferably whole alien species. Slowly. And then Edge spotted the holocamera, and everything went to hell in a hurry.
Turn that bloody thing off!
Edge advanced on Flynn, who backed quickly away, still filming. Flynn had worked in combat zones and knew the first rule of reporting was to keep filming no matter what. Edge loomed over him, sword ready for a killing thrust.
I said turn it off! No one films me. No one!
Toby stepped forward, hands raised placatingly.
It's on the Empress's orders. She wants a complete record.
Edge spun around with blinding speed and hit Toby across the face with the back of his hand. Toby hit the floor hard and fought to clear his head. Blood poured down over his mouth from one nostril, and he spat it away. He got one knee under him, and then had to stop as his head swam sickly. Flynn had backed up against a wall and couldn't retreat any farther. He was still filming. Toby struggled to find the words that would defuse the situation. There had to be something he could say. He always knew what to say.
Leave the man alone, Edge,
said Barr.
We obey the Empress's commands in all things.
Shut up, you sycophant!
Edge didn't look around. He had his sword pointed at Flynn's throat.
Throw that camera down and smash it, boy. I want to hear it crunch under your heel.
Flynn tried to say go to hell, but couldn't get the words out of his throat. You didn't talk like that to investigators, particularly those with a killing madness in their eyes. But he still wouldn't surrender his camera. Edge smiled suddenly, and Flynn's blood ran cold.
Leave him alone.
Shoal's voice was calm and quietly amused.
His kind are like rats. Kill one and they'll all come swarming around. You heard the man. This is the Empress's idea. You really want to be dragged before her in chains to explain why you disobeyed a direct order?
What can she do to me? You know why we're here. Too old or too frail to be trusted in the field anymore, but too dangerous to be allowed to run loose. We're not allowed to work for the clans anymore. We were doing too good a job. She's frightened of us, of what we might do. I spent all my life in her service, and for what? To end up on this shitball as local enforcers. She wants this event covered. I'll give the precious viewers something to watch they won't forget.
He drew back his sword for a thrust that would take Flynn low in the belly. Flynn couldn't move. Toby surged dizzily to his feet, blood spilling down his chin from his smashed nose. He was probably just going to die along with Flynn, but he couldn't just stand by and watch his cameraman be killed. And then Shoal stepped forward and hit Edge professionally on the back of the neck. Edge slumped forward onto his knees, the sword dropping from his suddenly limp fingers. Barr looked shocked, but said nothing. Shoal smiled down at the dazed figure before her.
Do as you're told, Edge, or I'll put a muzzle on you.
Nicely handled, Shoal.
Half a man nodded to Daniel and Stephanie.
My apologies. Edge has his good qualities, but diplomacy isn't one of them. I'll keep him on a short leash in the future. I suggest we bring this meeting to a close. We've already given the viewing public plenty to gossip about, and I'm eager to begin my work here. Are the files ready?
Everything you requested. Maps, histories, troop details.
Might I inquire, on behalf of the viewing public, just what your purpose here is,
Half a man turned his single eye to look at Toby, who was now standing more or less steadily with a handkerchief pressed to his swelling mouth and nose. Half a man smiled with his half a mouth.
Persistent type, aren't you? Surely you must have realized by now that asking the wrong questions here can be hazardous to your health.
All part of the job, sir.
Toby lowered the handkerchief so his words could be heard clearly, and ignored the blood that still dripped from his chin.
Would you care to make a comment at this time?
Not really, but after my associate's outburst, I suppose I'd better.
Half a man turned a little to face Flynn's camera directly. His energy half spat and sputtered, and Flynn had to quickly crank down the camera's light sensitivity. Half a man half smiled for the viewers.
The Empress has decided that those investigators who are no longer able to give 100% in the field, either through age or injury, will no longer be allowed to retire to work for individual clans. The privilege was being abused. In future, such investigators will be trained to work together with armed forces in especially dangerous trouble spots, where their knowledge and experience will be invaluable. This is to be a pilot scheme, to be observed and studied for its success and limitations. As trainer of all investigators, I volunteered to oversee the operation. And that is all I have to say, except that in future, I expect all news teams to keep a respectful distance, for their own safety.
He turned back to Stephanie and Daniel.
I'm finished here. Take me to your war room. Shul, Bar, bring Edge.
And as quickly as that, they all filed out and were gone, Edge staggering along between Shul and Bar. Toby and Flynn waited until the door had closed securely behind them, and then relaxed with explosive sighs of relief. Flynn turned off the camera and concentrated on breathing deeply. Toby dabbed gingerly with his handkerchief at his tender mouth and nose, both of which felt as though they'd swollen to double their proper size.
Did you get all that, Flynn? Tell me you got all that.
Every damn second. Even though I nearly had an unpleasant incident in my underwear doing it. I really thought he was going to kill me.
Of course he was. He's an investigator. Luckily, we were going out live, and the others were sharp enough to know what that meant. The whole point of this new scheme is to show that aging investigators can still be controlled and employed in useful ways. Half a man couldn't afford to have Edge going berserk in front of billions of viewers before the scheme had even properly begun. Did you pick up on what he said about the clans? No more investigators to work as enforcers and assassins for the families. Her Imperial Majesty would appear to be getting concerned about the growing power and influence of certain prominent houses, naming no names, of course. But you can bet it's no accident the pilot scheme is taking place on a wolf planet.
Damn right.
Flynn looked at Toby thoughtfully.
I saw you trying to get up and help me. Were you worried about losing me or your only cameraman?
To be honest, I was mostly worried that if you got killed, they'd find out about that lacy underwear you've got on under your clothes. I mean, I have my reputation to think of.
Toby Schreck had charmed, persuaded, and bullied various factory personnel into letting him use part of the complex's communications center as a mixing room for the broadcast he had to put together for the next day. He had a hell of a lot of footage, courtesy of the redoubtable Flynn, who was probably currently relaxing in his quarters in a nice little twin set in pearls, hopefully behind a locked door, leaving Toby to do all the hard work of choosing which precious moments of recorded history would make it into the final mix. Toby glared at the view screens and control panels before him, poured himself another stiff drink, used it to wash down a couple of uppers, and stuck his cigar back in his mouth. 2 a.m, wired out of his skull, his fingers moving faster than his thoughts could follow. That was how you got your best work done, if you were Toby Schreck on a tight deadline. The whiskey burned in his chest and in his mind, the uppers hammered through his bloodstream, and the cigar smoke kept him balanced as he sorted the gold from the dross. He had to make this compilation look good, really good. The live footage of half a man and his investigators had made people sit up and take notice, and won him his best viewing share ever. But it hadn't made him any friends among his fellow reporters, who had been besieging the Wolf Complex with requests, demands, and pleas for entry visas ever since. The Wolves, not surprisingly, were stonewalling. They still thought they could control things, as long as it was just Toby Schreck and his cameraman. Toby grinned around his cigar. He'd show them. Start with the Mother Bee footage. That was the motherlode. He ran the tapes again, glaring in concentration at the tiny screens before him. He had 2 and sometimes 3 running at once to keep up with his rocketing thoughts. Flynn had got some great panning shots of the hospital tent with the factory complex in the background to show off the relative size of each. Then there were shots inside the tent, with the wounded lying still and silent, only sometimes moaning quietly on their narrow cots. He called up the master shot of Mother Superior Beatrice, explaining who would and would not be allowed treatment, according to the wolves. Then, a close-up of her tired, nearly defeated face.
In the winter, I've seen the surgeons stop in mid-operation to warm their hands in the steaming guts they've just opened up.
Yes, that would make them sit up and take notice. The Sisters of Mercy were well-loved and well-respected throughout the Empire. They weren't supposed to be forced to work in conditions like that, not even by the high and mighty wolves. Assuming, of course, he could smuggle this past the censors. There were a lot of people who thought they were in authority here, who demand to see the tape in its entirety before it went out. Toby grinned around his cigar. He had an idea or two. More whiskey and another chocolate. The next tapes were from the brief interview half a man had reluctantly granted him. He hadn't wanted to, and Toby had had to use the Empress's name as a threat more than once just to get the man to stand still long enough for Flynn to point his camera at him. Half a man looked even weirder on hollow film. Something about the energy field that made up his right side interfered with the hollow camera, giving the field a strobing, shimmering look that was actually painful to the eye after a while. Look at it long enough, and it felt like you were falling into it. Into a hell without end. He'd just have to do a lot of cutting back and forth between half a man and himself. It'd distract from half a man's speech, but he wasn't saying anything new. Toby's fingers moved quickly over the console keys, calling up quick shots of the three investigators half a man had brought with him. Half a man had refused point blank to allow them to be interviewed, but Flynn had sneaked some footage anyway. Edge looked like a psycho killer who just had his favorite cutthroat razor stolen. Barr looked like a machine just waiting for orders. And Shoal looked like she'd seen it all before and hadn't been impressed the first time. They all looked very dangerous, completely unswerving, and entirely professional at what they did. Poor rebel bastards didn't know what was going to hit them. That was when the control room door burst open and Daniel Wolfe strode in, only to come to a sudden halt as he discovered how little room there was. It rather spoiled the effect of his dramatic entrance. He scowled at Toby as the reporter turned unhurriedly around in his swivel chair. Daniel leaned forward menacingly, and Toby just happened to blow cigar smoke in his face.
Listen to me, worm. I want to see every inch of your tape before it's broadcast. This is a wolf complex, and we decide what leaves here and what doesn't. You even try and sneak something past me, and I'll have security throw you in the cells and have your superior send a replacement who understands how the universe works. You like the cells. On a good day, you can look through the bars in your window and see the war we put traitors against before we shoot them. And out here, we decide who the traitors are. So make the wolves look good. Make the factory look good. If you know what's good for you. This old man...